I'm going to be talking about adventitious presence, or the unattended presence of transgenes in public germplasm, at least from my perspective. This is a topic that, not too long ago, if you were to bring it up in this meeting, would have raised some eyebrows and made some folks uncomfortable. But I'm glad now that we can talk about it and not be scared to talk about it, because I think it's something that's been overlooked for some time, and the attitude has changed, at least in the public sector, to address this issue. The first couple of slides just kind of gives a picture of the environment we have to work in here in the U.S. And there's different figures for the number of acres planted to transgenic varieties, but one figure I saw recently was 99.something% of the acreage. But we all know that most acres are planted to transgenic varieties. I got from the, you can go to the USDA website, the APHIS website, and they have a searchable database of permits and other information. And I did a search for petitions for deregulation of different genotypes, and this was the list that was generated. So these are 14 genotypes or traits that have been deregulated since it goes all the way back down at the bottom. You can see BXN, and the most recent one at the top is the dicamba tolerance, and that petition is still under review, the petition for deregulation. This kind of a picture of the environment we are working on farm, on research stations, or university farms. We're usually in proximity to variety trials, which are essentially 100% transgenics in most cases. And we also have all kinds of different agronomic trials, whether they're fertility or weed-related, entomology, insect-related. They're all essentially transgenic in most cases. We can have regulated trials on farm, on research farms. And usually the farm plants cotton, so where there's not research going on, the farm's got a lot of times cotton, or I guess maybe it's more corn now than it's cotton, but still a little bit of cotton. So there's a lot of different areas where there's a risk of being exposed to transgenics in a breeding program, and I've just listed some that I thought of. Outcrossing, that's what we breeders tend to think of, but also using parental lines that we know nothing about as far as adventitious presence. We know that's a problem. We also make plant selections. Sometimes we make several generations of plant selections on open pollinated plants we don't know anything about concerning the level of AP. Sometimes we use pickers for harvesting, one row plot, a seed increase. And so anything in that picker could be a potential source of contamination of transgenic seed. Even in seed processing, a lot of times we'll use the same gen for genning our variety trials that are all transgenic. And I even thought about our seed counter. A lot of times I go to our lab and I look at the seed counter and I see seed all over the place. I used to have a shop vac right there by the seed cleaner and say, clean it up, keep it cleaned up. So a lot of different places where a transgene can enter the breeding program. But despite that, in view of this environment, transgenic environment we live in the absence of any real organized effort by, the cotton community to, address or minimize AP, we've had almost 20 years of transgenic commercial production. I think the public researchers, the breeders, have really done a pretty good job of limiting or minimizing AP. And I say that based upon what I've seen from entries in the regional breeder testing network. If you're not familiar with the what we call the RB10, it's just a trial run by public breeders from here all the way to California. We have about 20 locations now, and a breeder can submit an entry in that trial and have it evaluated over about 20 locations. So those represent, you know, the cream of the crop, the advanced breeding lines that the public breeding community is working on. So what I did is screen the entries from the RB10 for Roundup tolerance, for the Roundup trait. I guess what really started this was a concern that there could be some entries in the RB10 that had the Bogard trait in it, and that could confer an unfair advantage for those entries in the RB10. And there was a couple of cases where we had a location that had a heavy worm infestation, and some entries stood out, and there was concern that they may have the Bogard trait. So I decided to start screening the entries in the RB10. Well, I wasn't going to test everything for the Bogard trait. I just couldn't afford to do it. But the Roundup trait is pretty easy to do, pretty easy to screen for. So in 2002, I started screening the entries, which comprised of the advanced breeding lines. I've got three conventional checks in that trial, and I also included one or more Roundup ready varieties just to serve as checks. And it was planted as the screening process was planted just like a yield trial, except they were one row plots, 3 to 4 reps usually. And after it was planted, emergence, we did a final stand count and then applied a pretty good dose of Roundup, two applications of Roundup. When I first started doing this, I was pretty strict about, you know, the timing and, you know, putting the application out, starting at the 3 to 4 leaf stage and the second shot, you know, 10 to 14 days later. But I do have a number of applications that the first application didn't go out till quite a bit later. So after we sprayed, I waited for a height difference between the tolerant plants and the susceptible plants and went out and tagged those that looked like they were tolerant. We took samples from those and then did the lateral flow of the little test strips to confirm the presence of Roundup. And this is what that trial looked like. The picture down on the far right is the first trial I did in 2002, and you can see the few check plots in there. You'd be hard pressed to find any Roundup ready plants or tolerant plants in the breeding lines there. There were just a few in the entire trial. There was a few plants that had the Roundup trait that ended up being in a public breeding line. The other three pictures are the the trial from this year, and you can see the height difference in the bottom left corner. Since this didn't get a Roundup application until late in the season, I had to wait a long time for that height difference to show up, but we would flag those and then come back and test them. But up in the upper right corner, you can see right in the middle, there's two plots there, or two breeding lines where everything was injured. On the right side, you see a plot that looks healthy. That was a Roundup check. And on the left side of the two injured plots is another breeding line, which there are some injured plants in there, but it looks like the majority of those were tolerant. And that was one of the breeding lines that ended up in the RB10 this year. Just a recording sheet there. We also recorded, since we're doing test strips, we had the two cry genes, so we got a little information on whether or not the Bogard traits were associated with the Roundup. But here's a summary of the results. To set up this slide a little bit, we've got the year. That was the year of the RB10 trial. The next column was, that's how many entries were in the trial that year. And that included the three checks. It didn't. That doesn't include the Roundup checks. But so what I did is I took the observations on the number or the frequency of the Roundup trait that occurred in that trial, and I divided that into categories. Entries that had a frequency of 0 to 1%, 1 to 5, all the way up to entries that had a frequency of, you know, greater than 50. Come down to the bottom, you see the totals over these 8 years, and there's a few years missing that I didn't do this screening, but A total of 185 breeding lines have been evaluated over 8 years, and out of those 185 lines, 119, which is 64% of the total, 119 of those lines had a roundup frequency between 0 and 1%, and a lot of those were close to zero. The next column, 35 of the lines, or that's about 19% of the lines, fell into that 1 to 5% roundup frequency. And then you see as we get over, we even have some that were over 50%. In that last column there, 50%, those eight lines, most of those were 90% and above, so approaching 100%. You know, I had a few footnotes. If you take the app, somebody asked me, how many plants were you testing? Well, on average, it was about 300 per entry. When I first started, I was doing like 900 plants per entry, but now I'm down to, 250 to 300. Same table, but this is the area I think that breeders ought to be concerned about. We start getting up above 5% and over into the, essentially transgenic region there, 100% transgenic. Also, those over there are those eight lines on that last column. Almost all of those had the cry gene associated with it. So we had a few lines this year that were not only Roundup, but they were essentially had the Bogard trait, which under some circumstances would confer an advantage. So some general observations from that screening was, if you add those first two categories, that 0 to 1, 1 to 5, that makes up about 80% of the breeding lines. So about 80% have less, 5% or less, which I think is pretty good. Then we have about 12% that kind of fall in that medium range, 5 to 29, and only 4% that went on the other side, had a close to 100%. But those occurred only in the last 3 years, and nearly 100%. I already mentioned their Bogard was associated with that. So, but considering the environment, I think the breeders have done a pretty good job. But I have to put a disclaimer in here because I'm only looking at one trait, Roundup. So those numbers are very conservative and are going to be low end. Real world numbers are probably going to be higher. How much higher, I don't know, because we're just looking at one trait. If you add those categories above 5%, that only makes up about 17% of the line. And I think those are, that's the area I think that breeders need to address. And if we had some sort of guide to help us, implement procedures to address that, it'd be helpful. And that's where something that was initiated by Cotton Incorporated comes into play. And I don't know exactly when this was initiated, but Cotton Incorporated is kind of taking the ball on this and is working with other commodity groups, the Corn Growers Association, the Soybean Promotion Board, I believe sorghum, wheat, cotton. So this is going to be a guide that's supposed to help breeders implement procedures to limit adventitious presence. The first draft has already come out. It's been reviewed by a few people, and so hopefully in the future we'll be seeing more about that. But some of the things a guide could do, or what you'd expect, or what I would expect to see in the guide, or I've got some categories for Roundup frequencies in there. But what's acceptable? The European Union has their set of what's acceptable, and the U.S. has our own guidelines. But what are breeders going to use? So we need to establish limits. And what traits do we test for? When in the program do we do it? How do we do it? Are we going to have any kind of, when we exchange germplasm, are we going to have any kind of statement associated with that? Whenever I send seed to somebody, I got to say, this has been tested and this is what I found? Or I think we need to maybe have some sort of, not enforced policy, but some sort of guideline so that when we exchange germplasm, we know what we're sending and receiving. So, but whatever the guide is, I think it needs to be really simple, like a recipe. It needs to be easy and not interfere with the goals of breeding, and completely voluntary. We're not looking for We don't want Big Brother involved in breeding. I know that. Some possible suggestions that could be in that guide, and I won't go through all of these, but, you know, when to test, you know, if you want to test early generation, how do you do that? Later generations. You could even, you know, something we take for granted is that everybody is aware of, you know, possible contamination, but, you know, maybe we should talk to our workers and say, you know, you need to be careful around the seed counter and make sure the gin gets cleaned out. All right, this last slide is, I just asked Richard Percy to make some comments on the germplasm collection, because material's been submitted by breeders into the collection without any kind of knowledge of potential AP levels in that material. So, and these are some of the statements he gives me. First of all, this Adventist presence is a concern across all collections, or all the collections. And there has been a committee established to develop, you know, policy and procedures to address AP. And in the interim, they're going to start testing submissions. If you submit something to the collection, it's going to be tested, and if AP is detected, it's going to be rejected, and it'll be up to the submitter to, they can clean that up and resubmit it if they really want to deposit that into the collection. How'd I do on time? All right, that's the end. I'll be happy to answer any questions. Yeah.
Whenever you went back and tested your flag plants, were they 100% Roundup ready, confirmed?
Not 100%, but you know, I found out after a couple of years the trick is time. Once you spray it, if you wait long enough, the height differential really starts to show up. Because some varieties, you can spray it with Roundup and you go, whoa, that looks tolerant. Well, you know, some appear to be more tolerant than others, just naturally more tolerant. But given time, then, you know, because it damages the terminal and, you know, it doesn't grow normally. So given enough time, you get a good height differential. So most of the plants we tested were positive. Yep.
So what you know now, what is the biggest source of contamination?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. So all I can do is, you know, we can hypothesize what the potential sources are. And when we know that, like in my location, we do have some significant outcrossing. Where it gets started, I don't know, but it gets spread by us exchanging germplasm. We use germplasm that we don't know anything about. And then I send it on to somebody else. So,
what's the cheapest way to screen?
Well, the cheapest. I don't think anything is really cheap. So, this past season, right before a lot of the breeders sent material to the winter nursery, I was able through Monsanto to buy in bulk at a good rate test strips. But that's just for the two cryogenes and the Roundup trait, which that's two out of like 14 different traits. So we're just testing a couple of them. So as part of the effort by Cotton Incorporated to develop a guide, they're also looking at a PCR test that would test, the whole gamut of traits. Hopefully that would be, you know, we'd have enough samples that would be cost effective.